I'm opening this meeting of the House Committee on Revenue. It's Wednesday, May 22nd. We're going to put the agenda surprisingly in the order in which it's printed. I'm opening a public hearing on House Bill 2174A.
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. 2174A deals with urban renewal, and just to re-familiarize you with urban renewal plan, so we're all, I think, somewhat familiar with Measure 5 and Measure 50 and property taxes, and what happens is when there are areas of blight locally, you may have an urban renewal area, and prior to development, effectively, for taxation purposes, that property value is frozen so that as the investment is made in that area and the value increases, the excess value that comes from that, what would be taxing that additional value, goes into the urban renewal program. And so that's an existing program in statute, and this bill deals with some technicalities around that, and in particular, for a public building, it gives a definition to the public building for urban renewal purposes, and also states that three out of the four taxing districts that are most affected from that implementation, if they're a public building, because I'm sure that you know that public buildings are exempt from taxation, and so in that case, those three out of four taxing districts that are most affected would have to approve, and then there's an amendment which really deals with technical language with urban renewal plans and local options and permanent rates. There's things called standard rate plans and then reduced rate plans, which don't include the local options added on top to the permanent rate. And this takes all of that historical language as we've changed our property tax laws and modernized it, give it some conforming language. So it's very much a technical amendment.
Okay. Thank you. There are three people signed up to testify this morning. Could you all please come up at the same time? Avery Pickard, Wendy Johnson, Mark Landauer. And committee, my hope is that we will complete this public hearing by 8:30 and then do our work sessions and be done in time for us to get to our various 9 o'clock commitments. Thank you.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Mark Landauer. I'm here on behalf of the Special Districts Association of Oregon. And just to give you a little background on this bill has been in negotiation since 2017. As a matter of fact, we have gone through three chairs, I believe, on the House Economic Development Committee during this process of discussing this bill. And so we're happy to be here today. And thank you again. We're here in support of 2174. This is a product of discussions that actually have gone on for literally a decade. In 2009, Speaker Hunt asked several people who have been involved in urban renewal to sit in a room and find a solution to a problem that had been going on for some time. And the issue at that time was that urban renewal districts seemed to go on infinitum. There was never really incentive for jurisdictions to actually end urban renewal districts. As a matter of fact, there was an example at that time in the city of Portland that had gone on for nearly 60 years. Today, we're here to talk about a bill that actually deals with the beginning of the urban renewal process rather than what was considered at that time the end of urban renewal. In 2009, we set up a process by which urban renewal districts would have to seek support from overlapping taxing jurisdictions to extend an urban renewal plan. Now we're here to talk about the beginning of an urban renewal plan, and one of the issues for special districts has been for many years the consultant confer process, which we have felt for many years really didn't mean terribly much. The biggest issue for us was really public buildings, the buildings that urban renewal districts sometimes do would not result in any tax increment being created because, again, they were public buildings. So the issue here is when districts are participating in an urban renewal plan, they want a say in whether or not a public facility ought to be built that will result in no production of property tax. So over the last several months, we have come up with a House Bill 2174, which again, as staff described, creates a process by which overlapping taxing jurisdictions can have a say as to whether or not a city hall, a library, a firehouse, something of that nature would be permitted to be included in an urban renewal plan. The bill also does a number of other things in the promotion of transparency and communication because, again, once an urban renewal plan is established, all those taxing jurisdictions are impacted for decades to come. And so one of the points of this bill is to ensure that the all the impacted taxing jurisdictions have a very clear understanding of the time by which property taxes will continue to be used for these purposes and what the outstanding debt is within an urban renewal plan. Because again, an urban renewal plan may last for 20 years, but the property taxes that are created as a result of this economic development tool don't revert back to the taxing jurisdictions until all the debt has been retired. So that can be an additional 20 years. So it can be nearly 40 years of not seeing that tax increment return to the taxing jurisdictions. One last note, Chief Dyke has been a very active participant in this process. He had hoped he could join today. Regrettably, he is beginning his formal retirement ceremonies this morning after a very long service career with Tualatin Valley Fire District, and he wanted me to send his support for the bill, and he's apologized that he could not be here today. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to comment. Ms. Avery Pickard, I'm the executive director of the Oregon Economic Development Association. OEDA is the state's economic development association for members of the profession who are on the front line in communities across the state doing this work every day. Our members include local and regional economic development organizations, cities, counties, ports, utilities, chambers, tribes, workforce groups. It's a big tent. And we also represent the state's urban renewal agencies and the urban renewal policy interest and its best practices as one of the kind of key tools in the economic development toolbox for these practitioners. As Mark alluded to, this bill is the product of a collaborative negotiation between the economic development professional community, special districts, cities and counties, and it has been through the relevant policy committee. And it was back in 2009 that House Bill 3056 imposed reforms on the way urban renewal is operated, and this was a good faith negotiation process between sponsors and overlapping taxing jurisdictions and resulted in an MOU that provided a moratorium on negotiations until 2017, at which time the group reconvened to resume negotiations. And this bill is the product of that resumed negotiation. So as part of OIDA's commitment to best practices as regards to urban renewal, this bill requires certain public buildings to seek consent from taxing districts, and a number of other technical changes in the bill are designed to increase transparency, reporting content, and improve the overall statute. House Bill 2174 preserves urban renewal as, again, what we consider a very critical tool in a very streamlined toolbox with which to practice economic development in this state. And it does provide what we feel are meaningful updates that do increase transparency and accountability. Oregon Economic Development Association does urge you to support House Bill 2174 with the -2 amendment, and I appreciate your hearing my testimony.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Nathanson, members of the committee. My name is Wendy Johnson, here on behalf of the League of Oregon Cities. I'll go over the technical parts of the bill. On OLIS, you will find my testimony before the Economic Development Committee. It has a summary of the policy areas. There really are three big areas of change in the bill, and then it has a section-by-section analysis. This is a complex technical bill, so I've explained, especially for the record, what we're doing in that bill. It did pass out of the House Economic Development Committee 11-0. The reason it was sent over to the Revenue Committee is there was one technical issue still dealing with the division of tax, which is the amendment, which was incredibly complicated because we're dealing with many years of changes. And frankly, I had to work with the Department of Revenue, Bond Council, Portland Public Schools, and a whole bunch of other folks to make sure all those words were right. And so I want to say a public thank you to all those folks who are those experts to deal with the complexities. But at this point, everyone has signed off that the amendment is correct on how do you divide tax. And now it's quite streamlined. There are three new terms for the different plans. There's the reduced rate plan, standard rate plan, and permanent rate plan, and those will all be defined in statute using the Department of Revenue's administrative rules, but then updating it so it all works with statute well. So that's what the amendment is about. The bill itself, as my colleagues have explained, was to really deal with this issue of public buildings. When you do urban renewal, you're freezing the tax base, and the new increment is used back to the urban renewal district. So you're taking those taxing districts, including schools, for a time. And so the issue has always been public buildings. Those will not bring more tax dollars because they're not taxed. So the bill defines which public building, what is a public building and what isn't. And those were negotiated. Some people like to include a lot more things and others not. But I want to explain that an urban renewal district can still include any public building in the plan. It just needs to get the approval of those other taxing districts. So you can still do the police station, the fire station, but it's usually not the whole thing. It's a portion because you're trying to put together a funding package, and you may have a bond, and you may have a grant and something else, and you may just need a little more cash that could come from urban renewal. And so you negotiate that in the plan. And that we want that to go forward because these projects are expensive and you need to be able to fund it. So this bill will not change the ability to do any project. It just needs approval for the listed public buildings. So what happens is you put together your plan for how to improve the blighted area. You list out all those projects. And so in the past, it's been consult and confer. And there's a notice, and you can consult with the taxing districts. This bill will now require you actually have to send it. There's a timeline for giving notice, so you can actually have a little more meaningful conversation than just sort of pro forma. And then at the end, each year after a plan is indeed approved, you have to also provide notice of you're updating the budgets and things like that. So there's a mailing process to make sure this really does happen to the effective taxing districts. Should a plan project be rejected in that requires approval, the plan doesn't die. I mean, the whole plan is just that one line item. And so that's important, that there's not a veto power by the taxing districts, because cities really are the urban renewal, the economic development, that's their job. Fire district's gonna put out fires, but a city has many things to do, which includes making sure there's jobs for a community. So they can still do that work. It's just would be that one line item that could be not approved. Let's see, so I've explained would now be the approval of three of the four largest taxing districts. There's the three plans defined, and there's the annual statement that would improve transparency. So those are really the big
highlights, this doesn't affect existing plans unless a plan would be substantially amended. So if a public building is already in a plan, you don't have to go back and get approval or anything like that. It doesn't affect that. So with that, I would be happy to take any questions.
Thank you. Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for your explanation. Does a park, is that considered a public building?
Chair Nathanson, Representative Reschke, we recognize, in a previous time, I actually represented the Portland Development Commission for 10 years, and I've been on both sides of this debate. We were, from the very beginning, not including parks for the very reason that there is a argument to be made about livability issues and access to recreational and open space opportunities. And so as a result, parks are not considered a public building per se for the purposes of consent by the overlapping taxing jurisdictions.
And just one other follow-up. Thank you. Three out of four of the largest taxing districts. So one taxing district can say no, and then that particular item is not. So you have to cross a three-quarters barrier to get your plan approved, your amendment plan approved. Is that correct?
So Chair Nathanson, Representative Reschke, I'll just give you a real simple example. Typically, your four largest taxing jurisdictions are going to be the city itself, which is the sponsor. Okay. So you presume that's approved, right? Your next typical largest one is going to be your county, your school district, and then oftentimes it's a fire district. It can also be a community college. It can be other types of overlapping districts. But the point here is that you have to have the approval of three of those four in order for the particular project that's considered a public building to move forward.
Thank you.
When you started your testimony, you might imagine that it gave me pause when you explained that you had already worn out three policy committee chairs. I thought, oh man, we're really in trouble today. But I'm delighted that everything seems to be handled well, and we're going to survive this one. Are there any additional questions? Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you all for being here. I actually want to go back because I think I might have missed it. When you started, you were talking about discussions about ending urban renewal zones.
Yes.
So this doesn't impact that clearly, but did I miss you saying, and we've already figured that out and we've done that too? Or is that another project going forward?
No. Representative Nathanson and Representative Smith-Warner, we took care of those issues back in 2009. And again, the issue there was that urban renewal agencies would undertake substantial amendments during the end of an urban renewal district, thereby typically increasing their maximum indebtedness. And that, of course, allows for the sponsoring entity to issue additional debt, which then, of course, extends the life of an urban renewal district. So what we did in 2009 was basically said, if you're going to do a substantial amendment, you need the approval of the overlapping 75%, I think, of the value of the property tax. You would have to have the approval of the overlapping taxing districts that represent 75% of the value or the actual property tax receipt. Forgive me, it's one of those two, to say you've got the approval to make your substantial amendment and thereby extend the life of your urban renewal agency. What the result of that really has been, frankly, has been more collaboration, because of course, if a city wants to, if you have a successful urban renewal plan, you want to be sure that you're working with your partners, because there is that linkage. Those overlapping taxing districts now beginning in 2009, have a actual say that means something. The consultant confer, really, as Ms. Johnson described, was really pro forma. Now there are actual, the overlapping taxing jurisdictions actually have a say that means something. So at the end of those urban renewal plans, if a district wants to do a substantial amendment, they need that approval by the overlapping taxing jurisdictions to increase that maximum indebtedness.
Okay, thank you. Because just brief follow-up, I would be interested. I'll be interested in maybe checking in with you offline after later, either probably after session, about how you close those. Because I think about areas, particularly in Portland, where I'm from and represent, where more than 25 years ago, when I first came here, that have been urban renewal areas and some very successful ones, and indeed when and how we transition those into making sure that those become part of our tax revenue stream. So,
well, if I may, there was another component in that bill that actually, if you have a wildly successful urban renewal district, right, the bill actually allowed for the sponsor to spin off some of that increment and return it to the overlapping taxing mm-hmm. jurisdictions. That was a new spin that also helped many of the overlapping taxing jurisdictions receive unexpected property tax. When you have, for example, South Waterfront, which is a wildly successful urban renewal plan, you can spin some of that increment off that you didn't really anticipate getting to the district in the first place. So we made a number of changes in 2009, and I think comparatively this is sort of minor in comparison, but there are some very important components.
Thank you.
Thank you. There are no other questions. Thank you for being with us this morning.
Thank you.
I'm closing the public hearing on House Bill 2174. We will not be having a work session on House Bill 3357. That will be carried over to the next day. I'm opening a work session on Senate Bill 162A. And committee, I've learned that some of us have commitments even earlier than 9 o'clock, so we're going to try to work through these quickly, but stop me if I'm going too fast.
Thank you. Hey, good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 162A, just as a refresher, this is a bill that's allowing a personal income taxpayer at the time that they're filing their tax return to begin the process of establishing a 529 higher education savings account. So again, this would begin with the filing of tax returns beginning January 1st, 2021 or later, so not for a couple years before this process will begin. The fiscal expected is minimal, and the revenue impact is minimal as well.
Great. I have a motion.
Chair Nathanson, I move Senate Bill 162A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Marsh moves Senate Bill 162A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any questions? Any objections? Motion passes. The carrier will be me. I'll take a turn. Are we done on that one? I'm closing the work session on Senate Bill 162A. I'm opening a work session on Senate Bill 165.
Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, Senate Bill 165 requires employers in Oregon to indicate whether they offer a qualified retirement plan and thus are exempt from offering employees enrollment in the Oregon Retirement Savings Plan. It allows the Department of Revenue to provide this information on responses to the treasurer. The revenue impact was none, and there was a minimal fiscal impact.
Thank you.
Chair Nathanson, I move Senate Bill 165 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Marsh moves Senate Bill 165 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion or questions? Objections? Motion passes.
I'd like to carry that.
Oh.
I'm on Oregon Saves Board.
Thank you. Representative Marsh will carry that. Closing the work session on Senate Bill 165, opening the work session on Senate Bill 262.
Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 262 grants a sunset extension for the program known as Multi and Mupti, which permits cities and counties to grant a property tax exemption for multiple unit rental housing, and that affects two different programs, low-income multi-unit rental housing and multi-unit rental housing in designated areas connected to light rail and mass transit.
And Chair Nathanson. I move Senate Bill 262 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Marsh moves Senate Bill 262 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Objections? Motion passes. The carrier will be Representative Nose. I'm closing the work session on Senate Bill 262. There is no other business before us this morning.
Thank you,
ma'am. We are adjourned.